black are gold pants, 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 black podcast.
Blackheart Gold Podcast, episode 63. Pat Vint, Adam Jacoby coming at you live on Wednesday evening.
Mm-hmm.
AJ, what's going on?
Not much, man. Just got done having some dynamite sushi at a dynamite price at Samurai Sushi. That's what it's called. This is not a paid endorsement, but...
Not yet.
Not yet. If they're listening, talk to me. Holler. Had a great time there. What a day of posts today.
Indeed. I know that you've had a couple cocktails while eating sushi. I'm too busy drinking Haterade. Hey, speak.
I only have one?
Yeah. Wow.
I know, right?
What'd your husband have? Yeah, what a day of posts indeed between Afghanistan and the jerseys and the triumphant, dare I say, resurrection of Jeebus. Heck of a day. Heck of a day.
Yeah.
I'm actually drinking Matilda.
Oh, fuck you.
Leftover after Saturday's football viewing with my good friend Adam Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Follow him on Twitter at GoHawksFox. A loyal BHGP reader doesn't really comment that much.
They don't have to. That's
no. He's too busy having fun on Facebook with pictures of Alexander Hamilton. That didn't sound right, but you know what I mean.
But it is true.
It is true. Sweet ass times with Adam Fox and Alexander Hamilton. 1 week in the books, and obviously we've both had a chance to watch it. I've watched it twice now, at least the part before the rain started. What'd you think?
I think obviously we can't talk about the Tennessee Tech game without mentioning Mikhail McCall.
Yes.
That is the most important thing to come out of that. That and the fact that James Vandenberg is a legit quarterback.
Yes.
You have to assume that because... he was putting throws in, like, quarter-sized spots where they absolutely needed to be. And, like, those were the types of throws where the placement is so good that it doesn't matter what the defender does. You know, it wasn't just McNutt running a post route and having a ass-awful cornerback just fall down or anything like that. Like, those were sophisticated routes. Timing was perfect, and that's something that's going to translate really well into conference play. So that was very good to see. I'd mentioned before the season the fact that he wasn't ever, not even for a day, challenged for the starting role very seriously by Derby or Winky or Rudock. You know, that there was probably a reason for that, and we just saw the reason right there.
Yes.
He's legit, and I'm really happy to see that.
Yes, I agreed. There was only one throw that I could take any umbrage with, and there was some serious umbrage with that one. But and on a day like that, to only have one throw that was really, you know, borderline off is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be questions of his arm strength. There were questions of Ricky's. There were questions of Christensen's. There's always going to be that with Iowa.
Yeah,
we work around that.
Right, and unless it's Ryan Mallett, you're going to see, you know, some throws that aren't howitzers. You know, of
right.
course he's not Brett Favre back there. But McNutt mentioned after the game that because of the rain, Vandenberg's velocity was down. And Vandenberg mentioned that he was sort of having to shot put some of the throws a little bit because he wasn't getting a very good grip. So I think we're going to see a little more zip on the throws against Iowa State. I hope that he doesn't, you know, put extra oomph on some of them just for the sake of, you know, showing off that he can, because right. that's how mistakes happen. But, you know, if he's been a college quarterback for, I guess this would be his fourth year, I don't think he's going to make that kind of a rookie mistake, or not very often at least. So yeah. I'm not seriously concerned about that, but I think that we should see an even better throwing performance from him this week around.
No, I agree, and I think it looks like the weather's going to be perfect for one thing on Saturday, and it looks a little bit of a spoiler alert. We've already recorded with our guest for the night, but based on what we've heard from John, I think there's very little doubt that Iowa's going to focus on beating Iowa State through the air. As mediocre as their defensive line was against Northern Iowa, apparently the secondary was ripped apart, and so I would expect them to target that as much as possible, especially given the fact that they really did kind of struggle in the running game. And I guess that's the flip side of that. There was a lot of talk on Saturday, Twitter, and, you know, posts from people that were far more connected with the game than we were, that it looked a lot like 04, that it was, you know, throw to set up the run, use the run to make sure they're honest, but it's a throwing offense, which I don't think anybody expected going into the season.
No, certainly not.
But what you expect to see on Saturday, I think, without a question.
Yeah, and I would imagine that that's not always going to be the case in the Big Ten conference. But this is sort of an offense where they have the luxury of being able to pick at whatever the weak spot of the defense is, if it's, you know, unit wide. You know, I don't think that they can see one below average weak side linebacker and run a successful scheme out of that or anything like that. But, you know, Vandenberg's going to be able to throw on a lousy secondary, and Coker and this offensive line are going to be able to push around a lousy front four. So that's going to come in handy, and I think that they'll I think they should be in good shape this year.
Now, what did you think of the offensive line, especially – we already know the tackles in the center. What did you think of the interior linemen, Tobin and Geddes?
I thought they were both hit and miss. Some of that probably had to do with the field conditions. But, you know, Tobin made some mistakes at the snap a few times. I saw him struggle in both run coverage and pass coverage. He didn't look bad. I think that's I want to make that clear. This wasn't Adam Geddes 2010 or 2009 when he was getting pushed around by UNI's defensive line. There was none of that. So I'm not cringing in fear or anything like that. You hear that squeaking?
I do hear that squeaking.
That is Ellie and her squeaky giraffe. Yeah, how about that? She's already ripped the head off of it, and she's working on the paws. Anyway.
What about the giraffe?
Oh! Ho!
I don't even know what that means.
I don't even know, but you know what? It sounded witty.
Yes.
No, I think that that's... it's going to be nice to see these guys get four opportunities in the non-conference to get their consistency up to par. Because it's not there yet, and that's going to be a real problem against Big Ten defensive linemen.
No, I think the problem with trying to grade out what interior linemen do is that you don't really notice them until they screw up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't notice when the footwork's proper and the pocket holds and everything goes on according to plan, but you notice when they take a misstep and somebody goes by them, or, you know, they turn right when they should turn left, and that just happened a few too many times with Tobin this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. It wasn't that he was playing poorly. It wasn't that he didn't have the physical tools to do it. It was just a question of getting up to speed. And frankly, given the schedule in September, we say this frequently, but I don't think this is a particularly good Iowa State team. I worry about Pitt because they do run kind of a spreadish system now. But it is still in its infancy, and it's still Pitt. And then Louisiana Monroe finishes out September. I mean, they do get four relatively easy opponents before hopping into Big Ten play against Penn State and Northwestern, and you know, whether it be Tobin or Sheriff, or you know, if McMillan's able to come back and play by that point, whoever it is who hops into that spot, it's going to give them time to at least get acclimated to what they're doing, and I think that might be more important than anything else right now.
Yeah, I'm not really sold on McMillan being able to get back there.
I'm not either. No,
And I frankly, I'm not sure Sheriff's going to be able to bust through unless Tobin really plays his way out of the starting lineup, and that can sure happen. We've seen that happen enough on this team,
sure,
especially over the last two or three years. So well, I can totally see that happen,
and especially with a guy who's a redshirt freshman or is a true sophomore, one or the other, and Sheriff who is, you know, kind of being groomed as a tackle. That's always a spot where you could see someone hop in at guard 3 or 4 weeks into a season. It happened with Reef. It happened with Bulaga. That might be where they end up making the move, but he's, you know, still recovering as well. So, you know, it's Tobin's for the time being, to be sure.
Yeah. I think if Tobin can get through the Pitt game as a starter, because, you know, Pitt's got some talent on the defensive side of the ball. They've got pretty much everyone back. In the front seven, I think it's in fact everybody back, and they're pretty well regarded by Phil Steele too. So, you know, if they can hold their own against a defensive front like that, it's going to be really good. And if Tobin can't, well, we found out early that he can't, and
right,
we can, you know, we can start looking at moves after that.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. The one thing that struck me watching the game a second time was that there were times where there were open holes that Coker was missing. And I don't know if that was a function of it's week one and I'm still trying to get my vision down, or if there's a more fundamental issue. I'm thinking it has to be the former because he was so good at it last season. You'd think that there has to be, you know, just a bad day of not, you know, seeing the field quite right.
Yeah, I think it's some of that, and I would guess that the conditions also played a part there, just because you know how much Iowa likes to do those one-cut running plays.
Sure.
Sean Green was fantastic at that. But, you know, when Sean Green was playing against Iowa State and he would, you know, try to plant and make his move, he would end up, you know, getting hit by a turf goblin, and it's a loss of one or so. And we didn't really see that a whole lot with Coker, but that just meant that his footwork in the backfield was so stilted and off that he wasn't getting to where the holes needed to be. You know, probably some of that's vision, and some of it's also footwork, too. I'm going to be really interested to see if those bad habits keep up against Iowa State. I don't anticipate it, but it wouldn't surprise me either.
Sure. And in good Iowa fan tradition, it means we will immediately throw him under the bus and move on to another
halfback. I told you, Jason White, man.
He's the real deal. I watched this guy in high school.
But no, you can't run for 240 or however much it was on Missouri and be somebody who doesn't know where the holes are the next year.
Sure.
It doesn't work that way.
Right, right. The vision is there somewhere. It's just a question of actually finding it again. The other big question marks, let's just start with defensive secondary. Obviously, good game for Prater. No real standout problems for Castillo on the other side, which I think just kind of confirms the coach's faith in him.
That and confirms the fact that Tennessee Tech isn't very good.
Sure. I mean, you know, Morehouse said it was the worst team that he's seen in 19 years of covering Iowa football.
I refuse to believe that's true, by the way. There's no way that's true.
You think?
There's no... Look, I watched that game, too, and Tennessee Tech wasn't very good at all, but they weren't bumbling bad. I've seen Iowa play some just putrid teams, especially, you know, we don't even have to go back 19 years. I mean, look at the cupcakes that they were playing in, like, let's see, 2001, Kent, 51-0. And that game wasn't nearly that close.
Yeah.
And it was terrible. And that wasn't a good Iowa team either. They were building towards something, but they weren't very good.
I don't know. That team wasn't bad, though.
No, they weren't bad, but they wiped the floor with Kent, and that didn't happen last Saturday. And I mean, there were the Northwestern teams of, every year.
Every year before 1993, yeah.
Right, right. You know, teams like that.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point.
So, but we're probably talking top five worst that Morehouse has ever seen.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is an aspect of it too. So, graduating to playing a borderline 1A team in Iowa State this year is actually going to be a step up in competition.
Wow, borderline 1A.
Hate
I
week.
I see where you're going with this.
Yep.
You're going toward hate week. Bah! Okay. The other big story, I suppose, was Jordan Bernstein. Finally,
yes.
finally, thank God for the kid, thank God for us finally breaking through, was just popping people in a way that we probably haven't seen since, I guess Sash would hit people occasionally, but...
Sash, Marcus Pascal.
It was very much Pascal-like is what I was thinking. It wasn't Bobby Sanders. It wasn't throwing yourself, into somebody that's like a rocket, but very much Marcus Pascal.
Mm-hmm. Who, by the way, I would love to have back. I mean, one, yeah. Because he's like 30, and he's been playing football the entire time. But, that caliber of safety, we don't really talk about him because he wasn't Bob Sanders. But he was really good in relief of Sanders those next couple of years.
Yeah,
I think Pascal's about the best comparison you can make. Now, again, small sample size, but this is what Bernstein has always theoretically been capable of doing. It's what you would have expected out of him if he had been healthy.
Right.
I can't think of anyone who's still on this team who's had worse luck with injuries, other than maybe Mikhail McCall, but again, small sample size.
Right.
That guy's had just a bummer of a career. Hopefully he can come back with a medical redshirt waiver, a 6-year, because I think he missed 2 seasons to injury, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know if that's actually the case or not.
Well, there was one with a broken ankle, and then I thought that he was out for another year pretty early. But anyway, we can look that up later. Anyway, but he's fast, he's big, he's aggressive, he's healthy, and he's not going to transition to corner at any time soon. I think that ship has sailed.
Yeah. I think he was actually very much, was detriment a word? Put it a detriment as a result of being forced into corner early on.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think if it had left him at safety, he could have been a contributor early on, and you couldn't have avoided the injuries. Obviously, those just happen. But I think the combination of the position change, because he played safety in high school, he wasn't a corner there.
But he looked physically capable of playing quarterback. And
you looked at him and you said, of course he's going to play corner. But I think that probably ended up hurting him in the end. He seems to be better suited to be playing strong safety. And of course he was rewarded by his excellent performance by being named second team safety again this week, which just shows that Kirk Ferentz isn't paying attention to the depth chart on Tuesday.
Right.
I mean, there's absolutely no chance that he backs up anybody on Saturday, right?
You wouldn't think, but, I mean, you know how Ferentz loves to reward his practice guys, his consistent practice people. And so if Sleeper's still better there, then, maybe he gets a start. But there's no way that Bernstein plays for any less than a quarter and a half Saturday. And I'm guessing it's going to be more along the lines of about 3/4. And,
yeah.
But still a rotation with Sleeper. I don't think Sleeper is going to go from starter to off the field in 1 week without being injured.
Sure. No, I think that's probably true. And there'll be plenty of fourth quarter time for him because blowout. Boom. Iowa State, hate week.
Ah. Boom.
Boom. Roasted. Mr. Intrepid National College Football Blogger.
Oh, boy.
What do you have for us on Iowa State?
Well, they're not very good.
Yeah.
The end. No. Steele Jantz came in. look like hot garbage.
That and name still just makes me laugh. Okay.
I know, and I wish that he was still, you know, rocking the white trash haircut. And if there was any way that we could put jorts on him on the field, I think that that would be, you know, it would fit really well. I think that their offensive line is Kelechi. I'm going to butcher the name because I've never actually heard it said. Osamili, or it's something close to that.
Yeah, I think that's right, actually.
Sweet. Anyway, mammoth of a man at tackle, and that is it. Like, you and I got consistent pressure on them, and that's a real problem. Iowa has a defensive line that is ostensibly better than you and I's. Even if it's on par, ISU is going to have some trouble. Before we, you know, turn up our noses at the notion that Iowa would have a defensive line on par with you and I's, you and I is really good. Like, this isn't 1985 anymore when 1AA is automatically worse than 1A. You know, those days are long gone.
Right.
And that's sort of it's a tough preconception to disabuse yourself of, because usually that doesn't happen until a 1AA team actually beats yours. And that's still really embarrassing, facts be damned. So, but no, I mean, you and I has a really talented 1AA school. Or 1AA team. And so if Iowa's defensive line, which we all agree is pretty much the weak spot of the entire team, you know, as long as they're not worse than you and I's, and I don't think that they are, they're going to give ISU some fits, even with ISU running pretty much exclusively shotgun. You know, if McCartney was still there, he'd still be abusing that Norm Parker defense. Say what you will about McCartney and his ability to put together winning seasons at the Big 12 level, but he knew exactly how to attack the Iowa defense, and I don't really see that ability from I didn't see it from Chizik, and I don't see it in Rhodes either. So I'm not terribly worried about Iowa State. Weird things happen in Ames, but usually all the weird stuff happened when Dan McCartney was there.
Yeah. One thing I worry about, looking at the numbers from last week's Iowa State-UNI game, they have no discernible running game in the strictest sense of a running game. Jance was their leading rusher, and Jance was scrambling for those yards.
Mm-hmm.
The problem
And he wasn't that good at scrambling for them either.
No.
Apparently he's, you know, still struggling with his field vision once he tucks the ball in. You know,
no, I think that's true.
So we can't really hold that against him, and he'll probably even be a little better, if incrementally so, added against Iowa than he was this past weekend. But yeah, he's not going to Michael Vick us or anything like that.
No, but once he gets out, I don't think he's a particularly good runner. I think he's easy to contain out of the pocket to, you know, 4 or 5 yards at a time. The thing that I worry about is contain is going to be important if you're going to try to make them one-dimensional, and we all know that that's Norm's goal from, you know, the moment you step on the field, is to take away the running game, make them throw the ball. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that after watching last week, where Alvis and especially LeBron Daniel were in the backfield all the time and were very active, but couldn't seal a deal on a quarterback and continue to run past three Lambs and over again, that if your goal is to contain him and make him throw the ball from the pocket, those aren't the guys, at least right now, that you want doing that.
Yeah, that is a real concern. Now, again, that might just come back to field conditions, just not being able to change direction as effectively. You know, once Lambs of Three made one cut, or, you know, one false step in the backfield, maybe that's it. I do think that they were just a little too amped up and going for kill shots when all they had to do was slow down and
wrap up.
Yeah, well, wrap up or at the very least get better control of themselves and then go for something that might not rupture three Lambs' kidneys or anything like that, but that would at least get the sack. And I'm sure that the coaches are talking to them about that because that was way too many missed opportunities. And if that happens against a Big Ten team, there could be some really negative repercussions.
As was said on Twitter, I once made LeBron Daniel a sandwich. He lunged at it, missed it, and broke my toaster. there has to be some sort of control, and and I'm sure they're working on that. There's no doubt about that. But that's going to be the key to this weekend.
Yep.
That and I think putting together some sort of running game to keep Iowa State just honest enough to not be double teaming both Davis and McNutt in every play. I still see an Iowa win, a relatively comfortable Iowa win, but like you said, weird things happen in Ames. They haven't happened there that often recently. And when they did, they happened to a pretty bad team in 07.
Mm-hmm.
But weird things happen in Ames. You can't really knock it out until it's done, but I still think it's a relatively comfortable Iowa victory.
See, I do too. I'm a little perturbed by the fact that Iowa's only favored by, what is it, 7 points?
It'd be 7 points.
Now, granted, 2 years ago they came into Ames favored by 6.5 and ended up winning by 32. So these, you know, results may vary. But at least that team in 09 was coming off a 1-point win to UNI.
Right.
So there was a pretty obvious reason for depressing the line, and I don't think there's as obvious a reason here, especially when UNI looked worse this year than they did in 2009. So, you know, that line at least gives me a little pause. I know it's not hard and fast or anything like that, but usually whenever a line seems like 6 points too low, there's a reason, and Vegas is actually just trying to tell you something. So that's what I worry about. But at the very least, Vandenberg doesn't strike me as a quarterback who, you know, if he throws one early interception, especially off a deflection or something like that, that he's going to start getting in his own head. He's not going to go Drew Tate out there or Jake Christensen out there or anything like that. I think he's got the maturity to, you know, stay focused. He's got that, like, Ricky Stanzi-esque focus, you know, to not let one play, you know, ruin his game. And that was sort of uncommon for Stanzi compared to, you know, Christensen and Tate before him. That's uncommon. I like it, and I think that that's going to be a focus or a reason for success, even if the first quarter or two don't really work out really well for Iowa. So, like, let's say nightmare scenario, Iowa goes into the break down 14-10 or 17-10 because of a couple early turnovers. I don't think that there's going to be any panic under center. And so that's really going to help. And being that I think the talent level is generally superior on Iowa's side of the ball, you know, that sort of works itself out usually over four quarters. So, yeah, I agree. I think Iowa wins this pretty comfortably. I think they cover if you are all gambling people, and if you are, shame on you. I would say 13, 14, maybe even 17-point win.
I think it's about right. Well, we had a slight miscommunication tonight, and our guest was a little bit earlier in the show than we had anticipated, and so we will now break from this one, and we'll come back with John Bonenkamp of the Burlington Hawkeye to talk about the Iowa State game from last week, which he actually witnessed. He's one of the few who's able to do it. James Vandenberg mania sweeping through southeast Iowa and his thoughts on this week's game. Until then, huzzah and viva hate me. Tonight we are joined by John Bonenkamp of the Hawkeye, the paper of record in Burlington, Iowa. John not only covers the Hawkeyes, but also was one of the few people on the planet to actually witness Iowa State versus UNI last weekend. John, how you doing?
Pretty good. How's it going?
Not bad. Working the late night shift, huh?
Yes, I am. It's that time of year, and it's football, and it's fall, and so I'm in here a lot on the weeknights. So it's a lot of fun.
We'll get to your paper's namesake team a little bit later, but as
I
mentioned, you were one of the few that was able to actually witness Iowa State's home opener. What'd you take away from that Iowa fans need to know for this week?
What I took away from it was a really good game for the last 5.5 minutes. Before that, it wasn't a very good game. Iowa State didn't play well. UNI had its moments. They did some good things and really kind of seemed to have control of the game there, really until the last, like I said, about the last 5-6 minutes, and then Steele Jans made a couple of good throws, and Iowa State got a couple of touchdowns against a UNI team that I think was starting to wear down as they got into the fourth quarter, and took advantage of that, and Iowa State was able to pull out the win. So it was an interesting game. It was really dull till about midway through the fourth quarter, and then it got interesting. So I think Saturday is going to be interesting because of that.
Now, what was your opinion on Jant? I've never actually seen any game film. I've only heard secondhand reports. Is there anybody that you can compare to within the Big Ten or somebody that Iowa fans have seen recently?
No, the thing that struck me about him early on was you could tell that he was really nervous, that he was really, that the jitters were really getting to him. He made a couple of bad throws. I mean, he had 3 picks in the game. 2 of them were his fault. They were just really poor throws. One of them was a tipped ball near the end zone that UNI was able to pick off. But, he really didn't seem in sync and really seemed to hurry a lot of throws and made a lot of poor decisions. And then when it got into crunch time, he started to make some plays. He's a big guy. He's tough to bring down. He throws the ball well, but he's not real accurate. So I think on Saturday, the key is going to be keeping him in the pocket and making him be a pocket passer, because I think he really struggled with that on Saturday night.
The other big story that's kind of been coming out this week is that this is the first time in a long time where Iowa State seems to match up at least physically with Iowa on both the offensive and defensive lines. How did they perform, especially in the offensive line, on Saturday? Should Iowa be concerned that the pass rush or the Iowa State running game could be bringing them down?
Iowa State really had trouble running the ball against, Jance was their leading rusher, so that kind of tells you about, and Paul Rhodes said after the game that, they didn't get a good push off the offensive line. And when the left tackle went down, Osamele went down with an ankle, it seemed like UNI was able to get a little bit of a better pass rush. UNI didn't do a whole lot of blitzing. I mean, they kind of played him straight up. So, obviously Iowa State wants to get their running game going, and they really couldn't get anything going other than Jant scrambling and making some runs off tackle. So, and on the defensive side of the ball, Iowa State's defensive line had a lot of problems containing Terrell Rennie. I mean, of course, he's a running quarterback.
Sure.
And he was able to, they were able to get some big runs. I mean, he rushed for more than 100 yards in the game. So Iowa State's going to have to get more physical in this game if they want to have a chance. They just really didn't get a good push off the ball on the offensive line.
Now, turning to Iowa, your newspaper being relatively close to Keokuk and
yep,
covering that area has been all Vandenberg all the time this week.
Oh, yes, it has.
It's Vandenberg mania down in southeast Iowa right now. What's the atmosphere like there? It's been a long time since we've had an Iowa quarterback come from southeast Iowa.
You know, I think people, I mean, people knew him from when he quarterbacked at Keokuk High School. I mean, he led him to a state championship game and, you know, put up some big numbers down here. So everybody knew of him. You know, when he went to Iowa, they all kind of figured, you know, he was eventually going to be in the job he's in now. And, you know, a couple years ago when he stepped in for when Ricky Stanzi went down with his injury, you know, everybody kind of got on the bandwagon and, you know, and saw how, I mean, he performed okay a couple years ago. I mean, he was put in a bad situation. And I think everybody thought, okay, well, you know, in a couple years, this will be his time. And so, you know, everybody's really excited. Everybody follows. I mean, he's been followed for a long time. And, you know, now the whole state gets to see him. And when he gets into Big Ten play, the nation's going to get to see him. So, you know, there's a lot of excitement around that.
What was the book on him coming out of high school? I'm assuming it was skinny, relatively good arm, accurate.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I mean, he had a really strong arm. He was very accurate, but you know, as Kirk said, when they first went down to talk to him, they went into basketball practice, and the first thing he said to one of the assistants was, we need to get some weight on him when he gets there. And, I mean, he really is much bigger now than what he was when he came out of high school. And, I mean, he's a stronger kid. I mean, obviously he's put on some weight, but he's put on a lot of muscle, too. He doesn't look anything like he did in high school. I mean, he's a big, strong kid.
I know you were traveling to Ames. Did you actually get to see the Iowa-Tennessee Tech game?
I saw highlights and I've seen the replay. So, you know, I mean, he looked very good the other day.
Yeah.
So, if that's what you're going to ask, I mean, yeah, he looked pretty good. So.
That was my first question. Yeah, you anticipated it on me. But did you get a chance to observe the Iowa offensive line and the Iowa running game? And if so, what do you think was the big problem?
I think the weather caused a lot of problems. I mean that,
yeah.
You know, I'll make my judgment on them on a clear day, you know, and I mean that's, you know, I know everybody was concerned about the fumbles and as Kirk said this week, you know, even if it's wet ball, you still got to hold on to it, and he's right. But, you know, those were really tough conditions the other day to run in, even on a field like, you know, the artificial surface there. So, you know, on Saturday, it's supposed to be in the 70s, supposed to be sunny, so I think we'll get a better indication on how this line will play and what sort of running game they have.
What was your opinion going into the season on the defensive front? I know they're talking as if they're going to run a big rotation, and they kind of seem to try it this week, but there were also real struggles against the second string for Tennessee Tech after the weather delay. Do you think they're going to end up settling in on four people? And if so, who do you think it might be?
You know, I'm not sure who it'll be, but I think at some point you do have to settle into a certain group, and you do have to settle into them playing, because those guys have to get, you know, consistent reps and all that. And I understand the rotation part of it, because you want to see guys in certain situations and you don't want to wear them down. But at some point you're going to have to settle on the front four and who it's going to be. You know, I think right now they don't know who that four is going to be. So I think they're really using this right now as kind of a trial by fire, so to speak. Let's see what they can do, and let's see what they can do in game situations. And I would say by the time the Big Ten rolls around that they'll have a more consistent look about them.
Yeah. This week, I guess you probably know better than anybody by simple virtue of being able to actually see Iowa State in action. What do you think Iowa's going to do offensively to try to throw off what Iowa State was doing? Well, obviously, Northern Iowa runs kind of a spread, and they're able to use their quarterback to gain yards on the ground. Iowa's certainly not going to do that. But
no.
Any wrinkles you think you might see from Ken O'Keefe?
You know, you never see any wrinkles from Ken. I think here's what you're going to get. And,
Yeah. You
know, I mean, I think Iowa State's secondary is going to have some problems containing. If they go straight up against Marvin McNutt, I don't see anybody back there that can go at him one-on-one. So he's going to see a lot of double coverage. So in Iowa's case, I mean, they're going to have to, you know, James is going to have to find that second or third receiver. He's going to have to get the tight ends into the game. You know, I mean, Iowa State's got a good linebacking core. Again, the defensive line didn't look that good the other night. Their secondary had some problems. So, I mean, there's some opportunities there for big plays. So I think that they're going to try to hit, and they may try to hit one early just to kind of set the tone for the game.
How about on the other side of the ball? What do you think Jantz is going to be able to do against Iowa's D?
you know, the key is going to be containing him. They can't let him get outside the pocket because, I mean, what happened the other night was, I mean, a lot of those throws he made late in the game where he was scrambling and their receivers were able to get open against UNI's secondary. So if they can keep him contained and if the secondary can keep an eye on the Iowa State receivers, you know, you can really slow them down a little bit. But, you know, you can't let him, and if he does, when he does scramble, they've got to know where those receivers are at all times and can't let him get open. So it's going to be a situation where everybody's going to have to know their assignment, and they're going to have to, you know, they can't have too many breakdowns. You're going to have a breakdown every now and then, but you have to contain the big plays from them because I don't know if Iowa State can do the consistent big long drives against Iowa.
You'd mentioned before that that Iowa State had their leading rusher was Jantz after all. Did they end up just ditching the running game at some point or?
Yeah. I mean, they did, and I mean, it got into a situation of, I mean, they just were not able to move the ball, and you and I had a 22-play, 90-yard drive, and, you know, really kind of set the tone for the game in, you know, in the second half, and so it became a point where Iowa State just was kind of, you know, okay, we can run with Jantz, we can't really run with anybody else at this point, so they ran a lot of, you know, they ran a lot of plays with him just on keepers, and he became really tough to bring down. So the key for Iowa is you got to keep them out of that, you know, that third and one, third and two situation because, I mean, they're going to run the ball with him, and he's, like I said, he's really tough to bring down.
Your journalistic ethos might keep you from making a prediction, but if not, what do you think you're going to end up seeing on Saturday?
I think Iowa wins, but I mean, the key to me is going to be the early part of the game because I mean, Iowa State made a lot of mistakes early in that game, but UNI just didn't capitalize. And if they could have done that, they would have really set the tone for the game. So I think if Iowa can get off to a good start, I think you're looking at a similar score to what you've seen the last couple of years in this game. But if Iowa State's allowed to move the ball and all that, it's going to come down to, I mean, if it's a close game and Iowa State's got a shot there at home, you just don't want to put them in that situation where they have a chance to win at home in the fourth quarter because they proved the other day they could do it. So I still think Iowa wins, but I think it's going to be a fairly close game.
I know I already know what your answer is going to be here, but how do you think James is going to respond to the antagonistic environment in Ames, Iowa?
You know, I think he'll be okay. I mean, I mean, he's been through this before. I mean,
sure.
You know, he played in Ohio State, and it doesn't get much worse than that. And he said yesterday that, you know, it's a different atmosphere. I mean, Ohio State, it's loud. You know, Iowa State, there's a little more hostility to it. There's a little more tension. You know, there's a little more tension to the game. So, you know, the key is going to be for him is communicating what he wants with his line. And he said that the other day, but he's been through it before. So, however big Ohio Stadium is, you know, Jack Trice Stadium, it's going to be a little smaller crowd, but they're going to be just as loud. You know, so I think he has the temperament, you know, and the mood that he can handle that sort of situation.
All right. Well, John, we want to thank you for coming on and sharing your thoughts on the game and on our opponent for this week, and remind all of our listeners and readers they can catch John every day on the Burlington Hawkeye. And not only does he provide in-depth analysis on Twitter, but also weather reports.
Oh, yes. So, yeah, I'm a meteorologist. You know.
Yes.
It's an all-encompassing Twitter feed.
You might be the only sports writer with the National Weather Service seal of approval.
Oh, yeah. This is a dangerous storm. Yeah, this is a dangerous storm. So.
All right. Thanks, John.
Hey, no problem. Have a good night.
You too.